Good morning, Wantirna Church. Wasn't it beautiful to see the kids performing up the front? Some of them a little bit too comfortable in front of the microphone, I think. I have to have a conversation. No, it's good. It's good to see them up the front praising the Lord on the Sabbath. Let's make sure that this is all working. Okay. Oh, no, that's not good. Brilliant. So, today, I have a very different sermon topic that I would usually preach about. My sermon topic is entitled Unlocking the Scroll from Screen Time to Sacred Time. Who here has a smartphone? Put your hand up. Who here looks at their smartphone in church? Oh, I know some of you are lying. Did you know that there is a syndrome called phantom vibration syndrome? I want to ask another question. Put your hand up if you have ever felt in your pocket as if there was a vibration and realized it wasn't your phone. Put your hand up. This is a very modern signs of the times type of syndrome. We are so connected and I would say addicted to screens, especially with our phones, that our body actually thinks that we're receiving notifications when we're not. And that can be quite scary at times. I want to maybe just paint a picture for you, and you tell me if this is outside the realm of normality or not for you. You wake up, check your emails, maybe read the Bible on your phone. Then you go in the car, put on a podcast, maybe a song or two. Use the navigation, go to work, open the computer, go home, sit on the couch, turn on the TV. Maybe there's a Zoom meeting in the afternoon or in the evening, and then go to sleep scrolling on social media. Does that sound too abnormal for anyone in this room? See, when we talk about our screens, we sometimes don't realize how connected we really are and sometimes how addicted we are. I want to show you just some screen time stats, just to give you an idea of how bad it is in Australia. Actually, before I do the next one, does anyone here want to guess what you think the average screen time is for adults in Australia per day? 5 hours? Okay, no, it's yes. 4 hours? 7, 8. So the average screen time is 6 hours and 37 minutes per day. Now, what you guys are doing right now is you're trying to figure out where you are on that graph, right? If you're above or below the average, I can guarantee something, that you will underestimate how much screen time you actually use. Guaranteed. I'm going to do something very brave right now to start off my sermon. I'm going to show you my screen time. This is very scary for me, and I'm going to show you how much screen time I've used this week. Let's go. All right. My daily average is 8 hours and 51 minutes. Yeah. Should I just leave? Yeah, and I was quite surprised by that. I thought I was on the average. Now, I'm going to show you some more stats. Also, there's another one here, and it tells me that I pick up my phone 86 times a day. While I tell you a little bit more stats about the averages in Australia, I want you to go onto your phone. This is the only time I'm going to allow you to look at your phone during the sermon, okay? Go into your phones right now, go into your settings, and find screen time. Now, if you're an Apple user, it will be in the settings and then screen time. If you're with Android, I can't help you. You're on your own. Sorry. I don't know what it is for Android. Now, while you guys do that, I'm going to show you a little bit more stats. Teens spend 8 to 9 hours a day in front of a screen for entertainment. Now, maybe that'll shock you, but if you're a parent of a teen, I bet you it won't. The average person checks their phone 144 times per day. I'm below the average for checking my phone, but I spend time more in front of it. Families now spend 37 minutes a day in face-to-face conversation, down from 90 minutes in the 1990s. It's been cut by a third, and it's only taken us a few decades to get to that point. Now, is there anyone here who's surprised by their screen time stats? Anyone here who is below what they thought? Yeah, right. Bunch of the young ones, okay. Anyone here surprised that they're spending more time in front of their screen? Come on, be brave. Yeah, okay. These are the honest folk. Very good. Good work, Pastor Daniel. Well done. Now, why would I even talk about screen times? You probably look at this and you go, I am not here for a TED Talk. I'm not here. I could go on YouTube and find out how bad I am with my screen time and how I could do better. I'm here for a sermon. I'm here for something biblical. Why on earth are we talking about phones and technology? Well, I want to posit to you that screen time is a deeply spiritual issue. The amount of time that we spend on screens is not only a physical, a mental, or an emotional issue, but it's also spiritual. And I want to try and convince you of that by taking you to the book of Romans. I invite you to go to the book of Romans right now, chapter 12. You can use your phones for this, that's okay. Romans chapter 12, and we'll look at the first verse. I want to show you something in slightly different context. Because, of course, when you read the Bible, there's nothing about technology. There's nothing about addictions to technology. And yet, if you look closer, you understand that it might actually be there in front of our very eyes. Romans 12, verse 1. And it says this. And so, dear brothers and sisters, I plead with you to give your bodies to God because of all he has done for you. Let them be a living and a holy sacrifice, the kind he will find acceptable. This is truly the way to worship him. Now, what on earth has this got to do with screens? Did you notice that there were two words there, a living and a holy sacrifice? Now, no one will understand what that means if you don't understand the context of the Old Testament. If you were a person, an Israelite, who lived in the Old Testament times, how would you be redeemed of your sin? Does anyone know? What would you bring? A lamb. And you would bring that lamb to the altar and you would sacrifice that lamb on behalf of the sin that you have committed. Now, a lamb back then was on average about 1 denarii. Now, that may mean nothing to you, but 1 denarii is also about the same amount of money for an average salary per day. So you were giving up about a day's worth of your salary to be redeemed from your sin. Now, I want you to think about how much do you earn a day. Keep that to yourself and think about what pain and suffering you would go through to give up that amount of money for the sin that you have committed. Now, you might notice that it may not be a big amount, but it hurts just a little, doesn't it? Right, to give away money like that for something that you have committed, it's meant to hurt, but not too much. There's meant to be a sacrifice in here, but it's not meant to break the bank. In fact, in the Bible, it says if you do not have enough money to go and buy a lamb, or if you don't have your own lamb, then you would bring a pair of turtle doves or some flour. So God had provision. But the point was not the amount of money that you were giving over. It was the pain and the hurt and the sacrifice for the sin that was committed. But now, in this day and age, who here has gone to the altar and brought a lamb for sacrifice when you have sinned? Anyone here? No? No one here has killed a lamb? Anyone here eaten a lamb? No one asked that. See, in this day and age, we understand that we are post-Christ. You see, when John sees Jesus the first time and he says, "Behold, the Lamb that taketh away the sin of the world." What was John saying in that moment? He was saying, "This man is now the substitute for the sacrifice. No longer do you need to take the lamb because the lamb has come to us." Isn't that beautiful? So, what does that mean? Does that mean we no longer have to sacrifice to be atoned for our sins? No. There's just a different sacrifice now. No longer is it as the lamb, but now it is you. You are now the living and holy sacrifice. Your whole spiritual, emotional, mental, and physical well-being, who you are, everything that you have, your work, your family, your health, your money, your time, all belongs to God. And it must be a living and holy sacrifice to Him. It goes further in verse 2. If you keep reading in Romans 1, verse 2, it gives us a little bit more of the context. It says, and do not be conformed to this world, but be what? What's the next word? Transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. How do we know that we are giving a worthy sacrifice? How do we know that we are doing the right thing when we ask for forgiveness and to be worthy in God's sight? You must be transformed by God and not conformed by the world. You cannot be conformed by what the world gives you, but you must be transformed. In other words, there's only one or the other. You can't have both. In fact, Pastor Steve Walton says it much more better than I do. You are either conformed to this world or you are transformed by God. Which one are you? Are you being transformed by God, or are you becoming more like the world? Because you can only be one or the other. And my belief is that every generation that has come post-Jesus has had their challenge to fight against the world trying to conform you so that you can be transformed by God. Every generation that has existed in history has had this challenge to fight against the world. And it seems like we are becoming more conformed to the world by this. Now, there's a lot that can be under this umbrella. It can be technology. It can be screen time. It could be that really scary word, which I say is AI. We hear about that now. We're right in the midst of AI and the things that it can do. And that could just be a whole new sermon unto itself. I'm not even going to touch AI for now. I want to focus on screen time and technology. And I believe that technology is our challenge today to not be conformed to the world. Now, I don't think that technology is so evil and poisonous that we should just throw it all out and grab one of those old Nokia phones. Remember those? Those are great. You know what? You could probably find a Nokia in your basement and it's still probably working. They are amazing phones. Amazing. But I want to posit to you that technology has a deeply spiritual connection for the times that we live in today. And so we're going to unlock the scroll today as a church, and we're going to go from screen time to sacred time. And how are we going to do that? In three categories. We're going to look at the distortion that technology brings. We're going to look at the formation that happens, and we're going to look at the erosion that is also a part to play in this. The what, the how, and the why. And so we start with distortion, the what. Now, you've probably heard it said that technology is just a tool, that all it is depending on the user. You can use it for good or you can use it for evil. Depending on what is going on with it, the actual tool itself is neutral. There's no good and no bad. I want to show you what a tool actually is. You've seen these before, haven't you? I want to hear all the men go, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I know the tools. Yeah, 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 they're in there with all the dust on them. Tools are very specific in what they do. They are made to achieve the goal that you set. If you want to build a house, you grab the tools that you need and you use them. Not only that, but used incorrectly, they can cause damage depending solely on the user. I remember the first time I used a circular saw. Very scary thing to use. And I didn't want to go near it because I did not have the experience and I knew I could do a lot of damage because I was so inexperienced in that area. One more thing with tools. The R&D, the research and development, the people that make the tools, the money goes towards the tool being better for the user. Now, I want you to remember those three things because this is technology. Let's go through those things. Can technology cause you harm even if you use it correctly? What do you think? You think so? Even if you use it exactly the way that people tell you to use it, to put all the boundaries on it, to make sure you're not on it all the time, can it still cause you harm? It can. What about the money and the R&D that goes towards creating phones, technology, tablets, computers? Do you know the percentage of the money that goes into actually making the product good? It's not that high. Up to 30% of the money that goes into R&D for technology goes into something called behavior management. Do you know what that is? That's money to psychologists. That's money to people who are in the job of trying not to change the product, but to change you. That doesn't sound like a tool to me. Tools are made to make tools better for the user. Tech makes the user better for the tech. That almost sounds like a conforming to something else. It's a bit scary. Let's look at some of the problems and then we'll get into more of the spiritual stuff in a second. The first thing, the attention economy. The number one, I would say, aim of the R&D development teams is to get your eyes onto the screen. Is this a surprise to anyone? No. The attention economy. Let me say a few things that they try and do to keep you on the screen. Have you heard of infinite scroll? Do you know what that means? If you use social media, you'll understand what this is. You can keep scrolling forever and ever and ever. Amen. You can just keep going. There's no stop. What about autoplay? If you've ever been on YouTube and you finish your video and, oh, I just forgot to stop it. It's on the next one. Let's watch this one because this is pretty cool. And you get sucked into that black hole. Anyone here use Duolingo? Yep, I know you because I've added you as friends. All right, I'm trying to learn Spanish. Duolingo, if you jump on and you see what it does, it has very specific noises. I can go ding, and everyone knows what that is. Right? There's one where you finish a lesson and it makes a big noise with a trumpet. It has these abilities to have streaks. A streak is something that forces you to go back every single day so you can keep up the streak. All of these things are things that pull you back into the system. Anyone here get a notification every few minutes on your phone? I would say to turn them off as much as you can. They are meant to bring you in. What about likes and loves and hearts on social media? Pull to refresh. By the way, all of these types of things that we deal with technology, do you know where the psychologists get the ideas from? Does anyone know? The casino. A lot of these things that we do on our technology are actually straight from the casino, the pool, and the sounds, and the lights, and everything that keeps you in to this tech. I don't want to go into too much detail, but you can look at documentaries like The Social Dilemma on Netflix, which is a really eye-opening documentary that shows you the types of things they do with Facebook and Instagram to keep you addicted. Billions of dollars are given to behavioral manipulation. Engineers, psychologists, algorithms, all fighting for your attention. And it comes down to this. The most brilliant minds on earth are no longer racing to cure disease or explore space. Many are being paid millions to ask one question. How do we keep people scrolling just a little longer? I want you to see the fight that we are in because it is not a neutral tool in your pocket. Yes, there are lots of good things that can be used for this. I'm using a screen right now to show you the sermon. I understand that. But this is not neutral. If left unchecked, you can be taken away and conformed to the world. The deck is stacked against us before we even open the phone. There are other things that we understand. I'll skip through them very quickly. There's a loneliness epidemic. We understand that. People, especially the young ones, do not meet together anymore. Do you remember the times, for those who are a little bit older, and you'd just run into somebody at the cafe or the shopping center, and then you just stop there and talk? I remember in New Zealand, we used to have this place called The Warehouse, which is basically, I don't even think Australia has anything like this. It's like Bunnings mixed with Big W. And we would go there. This was a really big place, and everyone would just stop and chat with each other. I would hate it when I would walk with my mum to the shops because she's Filipino and she has to talk to every single person she sees there. And if there's another Filipino across the road, we know we're going to be there for another hour. That's just how we deal with things in our culture. But this kind of accidental popping in, that doesn't happen anymore. If you sit on a train, how many people are giving you eye contact? It's only the scary ones. Everyone else has got their headphones on. They're looking down on their screens. We don't have these casual conversations anymore, and it's causing a loneliness epidemic. Have you ever heard of digital dementia? You might know this. You might even feel it if you've been in front of a screen for too long during that day. Your brain just does not work on all 12 cylinders, however many you have. The idea of digital dementia is actually quite new. There is cognitive decline connected and correlated with screen time. And even teenagers who are meant to have their brains formed the right way, they are complaining that they are having dementia-related memory problems. Can you imagine that? Before they turn 20 and they're having memory problems. And then, of course, the increased dependence. There was an experiment that was done by a guy called Simon Workert. And it's really interesting what he did. He was in Italy and he borrowed a wheelbarrow and he put 99 phones in the wheelbarrow, all using Google Maps. And he went for a walk. And as he was walking through the street, he realized that the streets he was going down were completely empty of cars. He tried it out, and the really, really full-on streets where there was meant to be quite a lot of traffic, and he noticed that as he was walking down the street with his wheelbarrow, all the cars started to clear. Why do you think that is? It's because everyone else who was using Google Maps thought that there was a traffic jam in the streets. And so the AI and the technology would reroute them away from the empty roads. Now, it kind of gives you an idea of how dependent we are on technology, because all it would take is for one of those drivers to look up, to look around. That's an empty road, and yet they're on that screen depending on technology. Who here has to get their phone out to do simple calculations on the calculator? Don't put your hand up. No, we'll keep that between us. We are becoming more independent and dependent. And then, of course, we talk about AI, and we won't get into that. So, my question is, are you becoming conformed to tech, or are you being transformed by the Word of God? That's the first question we have to ask ourselves when it comes to this technology problem. So that was the first one. That was the what. That's the stuff that we're all struggling with. But let's get a little bit deeper. Let's get a bit more spiritual, because we've talked about some stats. But let's look at the how. There's a quote by William Blake, and he says this: we become what we behold. You've heard that before, haven't you? We become what we behold. There's a similar verse, actually. I'm guessing this is where he got that idea from, 2 Corinthians 3, verse 18. It says, but we all, with an unveiled face, beholding as in a mirror the glory of the Lord, are being transformed into the same image from glory to glory, just as by the Spirit of the Lord. What is that telling you? That's saying that if you stare at God, if you have your focus on God, you become like him, because we are looking at him. But the same can be said that if we are looking towards something else, like our screens, then we will become what the screens tell us. And what's the content that is coming from our screens? Again, I wanted to bring up some recent events to make this really real for you. You may have heard the story online. Did you hear about a shooting in San Diego? Yeah, it's quite recent. It actually only happened last week. It sounds like there were multiple. I think this is the one that was in the Islamic Center. Right, and there were two teenagers, I think they were 17 and 19 or around those ages. They did some investigation, and what they found is that the teenagers were inspired by the 2019 shooting in Christchurch. Do you remember that one? A lot of people died that day. And one of the things that happened during that shooting was they live streamed the whole event. You may have forgotten, But the shooter had a camera and people were watching him as he was gunning down people. They later found out that this event here had the same thing. The teenagers were live streaming the event and people were watching. They were connected to this. We also found out that the teenagers met each other online. They didn't even know each other in person. And they became radicalized together online. And when they found their manifesto, the document that would tell them the reasons behind the attack, they found that they hated both the Muslims and the Jews. Now, if you have been around for the last few years, you may realize that there is an increase in racism. We can talk about Islamophobia, we can talk about anti-Semitism, we can talk about all the different colors of the rainbow in terms of races. There is a growing concern of extremism and online hate. And what they're finding is a direct correlation between the time that people spend online and some of these hate crimes. We're becoming more radicalized by what we see, and we are being pushed to the extremes. Acts 17 verse 29 says this, "Therefore, since we are the offspring of God, we ought not to think that the divine nature is like gold or silver or stone, an image formed by the art and imagination of man." This verse has no context, no meaning to you whatsoever, because it doesn't make sense with what we're talking about until I tell you what the words are used in Greek. The word here for image is charagma, which can be translated as idol. And the word for art is techne, which can also be translated as technology. So when we look at this in the modern context and we read the verse again, it says, "Therefore, since we are the offspring of God, we ought not to think that the divine nature is like gold or silver or stone, an idol formed by the technology of man." Can you see that, church? Technology is an idol. It is something that is created to take us away from goodness. This is our Tower of Babel. This is the land of confusion. This is the new God that humanity is building to reach the heavens for themselves. Can you see this? I want to share something that's quite funny. This man here is an AI priest. There is now a growing creation of AI robots or AI people who can now talk to you about any question that you have. And so, if you want to have ministry-related questions, you don't have to come to me, you don't have to go to Pastor Daniel anymore, you can go and find the AI priest. And his name is Father Justin. Isn't that great? Is that good news? Why is that so dangerous? Daniel and I are scared for our jobs. We're worried. A few more years and we're going to be taken over by a very good-looking priest. Maybe not this one, but they might get better looking. What's wrong with these online connections? We're putting too much trust in what we don't understand. Imagine putting your salvation, putting your understanding of the Bible in the hands of AI. That's what we do already. And what happens is that there are these echo chambers of thoughts and belief that are not challenged and are not formed in real life. You see, why was there not as much extremism 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago? It's because if you had a crazy idea, you were not in isolation. You would be a part of a family unit. You'd be part of a church unit. You'd be part of a club unit, some social unit, school, work, all of these units that come together and they start to do iron with iron and they forge your ideas and it makes it a little bit more reasoned. We don't have that anymore. And so when you mix loneliness, anger, a lack of empathy, no dialogue, you get extremists. But I'm not just talking about the ones that are going and committing hate crimes in the real world. This applies to us as well. If you have social media, then you are dependent on recognition, praise, and comparison. Have you ever posted a photo on your social media and not had anyone like it? Has anyone done that? I have. Many, many years ago, I posted a photo of my weight loss journey on Facebook, and I had no likes for an hour. And then I got one, and it was my mum. That's worse than no likes. I felt in my heart something that sunk. You might even feel the same way if you're in a group message on WhatsApp and you're too scared to speak or talk because you're worried about what other people are thinking about you. It's a real thing. We're scared because we are so reliant on praise from others. You know, Jesus didn't have social media. We know that. He didn't have Instagram. But do you know what he did have? He had lots of followers. And you know what it says in the Bible? Book of John. Chapter 2. I don't know why it says Acts down the bottom, but it's John chapter 2. And it says, because of the miraculous signs Jesus did in Jerusalem at the Passover celebration, many began to trust in him. But Jesus didn't trust them because he knew all about people. No one needed to tell him about human nature, for he knew what was in each person's heart. Jesus was not carried away with wanting to please other people. He knew that he started to get a lot of followers. People liked what they saw and what they heard, and they wanted to be a part of that movement. But Jesus did not allow that to take him away. He had a goal. He knew what he was here for, and he allowed himself to be transformed by God and not by the world. So that's number two. That was the how. We're at the third stage, erosion, the why. We know technology affects us in horrible ways. We understand that the content that we watch needs to be made sure that it has boundaries and understand the human heart. But there is a reason why this is important, and it's the worst of them all with all of these three categories I've talked about. I'll start off with this quick story. Anyone here seen The Chosen TV show? Great show, isn't it? So, if you remember the first season, third episode, there was an episode called Jesus Loves the Little Children. One of my favorite ones, actually. And it's actually not biblical per se. It's not a story in the Bible. But the point is that Jesus starts to interact with these kids and makes little trinkets. And he was a carpenter, so he was making wood carvings and things for them. But there is a scene, and actually the point of the story is that my kids were watching with me, because there are not many episodes that are appropriate for children, but this one was. And so I let them sit down. And as we were watching, Jesus was in his tent, and he starts to lie down, and you can tell that he wants to go to sleep. And Naomi turns to me, and she says, "Dad, why does Jesus not need a phone to fall asleep?" How do you think that made me feel? I told Maritza later, and then we pointed at each other. It was like, no, that's you. That's your fault, not my fault. The reality is it's both of our faults, right? Because they watch us. The kids are watching what we do. And they are modeling the behavior of how to interact with the world from us. That's such a scary thought. See, other generations before us, they had vices that they had to deal with. There were lots of drug problem. There was a lot of alcoholism. You know, we talk about the 90s. That was really the peak of problems with alcoholism and drugs, right? And even 2000s. All of these drugs, they release something called dopamine. It's a neurotransmitter, right? It's something that binds you to something. It causes addictions. We know this. This is something that we've been told about. The addictions themselves are usually formed in adolescence. So in those kind of 10 to 20 age years, that's when the brain really is trying to understand the world and it's growing and it starts to get connected to things. And of course, at that point in time, they want to see what their peers are doing, not necessarily what the parents are telling them to do. But nowadays, that drug and addiction problem has now been translated to technology. So this is good news, right? Addictions with drugs and alcohol is going down. Praise the Lord. But it's only being replaced by technology. Did you know that every time you get a ding, every time that you see a notification, every time you feel a vibration, it causes the brain to release dopamine? Every single time you get a notification, something goes in the brain saying, this feels good. And it binds them to the screen. And the scary thing about this is that drugs and alcohol, pornography, all of these illicit things, they all have age limits. Remember in the 90s when they had the DVD stores? And there was always that adult section behind the curtain, right? There was at least some kind of separation and you had to try hard to do something wrong. But let me ask you a question. Would you ever give a child a bottle of vodka? Maybe if you get really desperate. I've heard stories. You wouldn't. But we give our kids the phone with no problem. You know, there are guidelines from the government that say that if you are a child from 0 to 10, you should not have a tablet, an iPad. And when it comes to mobile phones, they should not really have social media or any of those things until they're 16 and above. Now, thankfully, Australia has caught on to that with social media. But there are other things that we need to put boundaries around. And this is not me judging, because by the way, my wife and I, there was a time when we didn't have children. And there was also a time where we would go through the shopping center judging the parents who would put an iPad in front of the children. And then guess what happened to us? We became parents and we had children and we started doing that to our kids sometimes because it's so hard not to. There's something magical about having a child who is playing up, who is crying, who is doing whatever, and then you just give them a screen and then boom. It's like magic. That's why it's so scary. It works faster than drugs and it's not good for their development. This is not me demonizing you, because I understand how hard the world is right now with screens, and I'm talking out of my own hypocrisy that we do this as well. But my question is, are we protecting the next generation? Are we protecting the children? Because you know, Jesus loved the little children. In fact, he goes so far to say in Matthew 18, he says this, but if you cause one of these little ones who trusts in me to fall into sin, it would be better for you to have a large millstone tied around your neck and be drowned in the depths of the sea. What's Jesus saying? He says, protect the little ones. Make sure that the next generation is prepared and ready for what is about to happen. And if you still don't understand how bad screens are, if you don't really know what's going on, and I have not been convincing enough, let me show you some of the numbers very quickly. You may not be able to see this in church. You might be able to see it online because your screen's a little bit bigger. But I'll explain this to you. On the left are the rates of self-harm that have happened between the years of 2001 and 2020. And you'll notice that there is a part where it just starts to climb. Do you know what year that is? That's 2008, 2009. Does anyone know what happened in 2008, 2009? What happened? iPhone? Which one? iPhone 3G. Did anyone here have an iPhone 3G? Oh, you guys are good. That was my first iPhone. That was the first mainstream iPhone that was given out. The first two iPhones weren't really a hit until the 3G one came out. And it was one of the best-selling phones of all time. If you look onto the right-hand side, you'll see rates of depression going up and correlating with internet, social media, smartphone usage. And you'll notice again another peak where it plateaus and then it starts to go up. That year is between 2010 and 2012. Do you know what happens during those moments? Of course, we started to get lots of smartphones, but there was one really big thing that I looked when I did my research. Instagram went from 1 million users to 35 million in 1 year. And social media blew up. Absolutely. Now, of course, I'm not saying, because a good scientist would never say that this is causation. There are so many variables that are happening. I cannot tell you that this is what's causing that, but there is a definite correlation, isn't there? You can see those lines rising together. So what do we do? What can we do in this time where the world is trying to conform us to this technology? Let me move to the practical very quickly. Number one, Proverbs 22, verse 6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Notice, church, the word is train. And what are you training the child to do? You're training him so that when he departs, he will not depart. What does that mean? You're training him for the world. You're making sure that when you have the children in your care, you're spending time to train them to be a part of the world, but not of the world. Do you know what that means? Don't just completely take away technology from them. You're not actually training them. Train them by modeling how to use technology safely and to do it well. Don't completely take it away from them. Deuteronomy 6, verse 6 and 7, these commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. What does that say? Model the behavior you want to see in your children. Make sure that your phone is not the first thing that's in your hand when they see you. You know, it would be great for them to see you on your knees or with your Bible open. I need to be talking to myself in that way. I mean, even if I have this phone, right, I'm just going to pretend that I'll come up to Keyshore. Keyshore, if I'm starting to talk to you and I've got my phone in my hand right now and I start to have a conversation, do you feel loved right now? I'm not looking at it, I'm just holding it. What is this telling you? I have other priorities. I'm not even looking at the screen. I've got it in my hand and it's telling him that he is not important as I start to talk to him. How about Philippians 4 verse 8? Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are good report, if there is any virtue and if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. Make sure the content that you're consuming are of good things. Guard against extremism. And of course, Auntie Ellen, An Adventist Home. If you have children, make sure you read the book Adventist Home. It says, gentle manners, cheerful conversation, and loving acts will bind the hearts of children to their parents by the silken cords of love. You need to interact with each other to cause the bonds of love to grow. Look at each other in the eye and have real conversation. So let's end with some recommendations. Put your phone away from your bed. Maybe put the charger away from where you can reach it when you wake up. Turn off your notifications or keep the ones that are important on. When you are with people, don't look at screens. Put limits on apps that you struggle with. Take up a hobby. Read some more. Do a sport, maybe fishing. This is a great one. Have screen-free places. If you want to go so far as to make the bedroom or the dining room a screen-free place. Something that we've implemented in our household is that when we sit at the dining table, phones are not allowed. We sit there and we have conversations with each other. This is a really hard one. You could even go so far as to say you would have a Sabbath free of technology. Could you do that? I'll leave that with you to see how you go, but it's actually really nice to have that rest from technology one day of the week. And there is a 30-day challenge that if you come and talk to me afterwards, I will be able to give that to you. And it gives you some pointers on how to fix our technology problem. Let me leave you with this verse. It's what I started with. And I'll invite the musicians to come up as we start finishing my message. It says Romans 12 verse 1. And so, dear brothers and sisters, I plead with you to give your bodies to God because of all he has done for you. Let them be a living and holy sacrifice, the kind he will find acceptable. This is truly the way to worship him. Do it for your family. Do it for yourself. But most importantly, do it for what God has done for you. Be a living and a holy sacrifice, the kind that he will find acceptable. This is the true way to worship him. God bless you all.